Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Gittin is daf Pei. We are in the Mishnah on Ayin Testament base. We start with the words Kassel Lashem Machis and Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is only Zechon Ishmael Liba Gabriela Bas Shmuel. We are in the Mishnah in the middle of the eighth parak of our Maseches. The Mishnah begins Kassel Lashem Machis Sheino Hogenes. So you write it and you date it. And your dating is based on a governmental system, a system that's just simply an improper governmental entity. The Mishnah obviously is speaking in obscurity. The Mishnah over here does not want to name names. But don't worry, because we're going to get to the Gemara, and the Gemara is going to name some names. So we'll identify in just a moment who they are. But you're dating the document. Now, the easiest way to date documents, and not only is it the easiest way, but that's the way we do it nowadays, is that we count from Bria Solam. In other words, the world was created, 5,776 years ago. So, well, good. So whenever we date a document, so we date back to the Bria Solam. So for us, it's really simple, and that's what we do to this very day. Back in the good old days, the times of the Mishnah, the Gemara, and get the historian to tell you how, you know, when that changed. Already by the Rishonim, here's a little that I know. Already by the Rishonim, they were dating by Bria Sa'olam. So the Rishonim were 11, 12, 13th century. So already by that point in time, they switched to Bria Sa'olam. But anyway, but in the Bismana Mishnah, Bismana Gemara, they were dated based on the local government. So what the Mishnah is telling us is, you got to make sure that you choose a local government that is proper. So if you date it to a date where it goes l'shemachus sheino hogenes, it's an improper government. L'shemachus Mada, l'shemachus Yavan, or if you date it back to the kingdom of Mada, the kingdom of Yavan, l'binyan abayis, l'churban abayis. If you date it from the time the Beis Hamikdash was built. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. So as the Mishnah is about to tell us, all these are improper dating. And the improper dating is going to result in a get that's puzzle and with the most serious ramifications. The Gemara later on is going to ask a very simple question, which I'm sure should be the first question when you see this Mishnah, that seems to be a very heavy ramification for essentially a good get, just but with the wrong date on it, or a dating reference point, which is just, you know, a little bit inappropriate. So it does seem to be a most serious consequence to what seems to be a minor infraction. The Gemara is going to ask that question. We're going to see that question in the Gemara. So stay tuned. I'm just noting now that yes, it's something to consider. The Mishnah Kepshuta means that you were in the east and you wrote the get in the west. You were in the west and you wrote the get in the east. Exactly what that means. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain exactly what the consideration of is over there. So again, so the Mishnah now is describing scenarios in which you wrote the get, everything came out good, except that you either A, dated the get to a wrong governmental body, or to the Binyan Beis Hamikdash, Korban Beis Hamikdash, or you misrepresented where you were when you wrote the get. You were in the west and you wrote in the east. You were in the east and you wrote in the west. So if all this were to happen, teitzei mizeh mizeh. So here we go now with some very serious ramifications. Now all this should sound familiar because we've seen this again and again at the end of Yevamos. Remember the Gemara at the end of Yevamos? The Gemara there describes how a woman's husband went away and he didn't come back, and we don't know. We are unfortunately at a loss of explanation of what happened to the husband. What then happened is that one witness came back and one witness gave a report, your husband died. Now we know the halacha is that based on the testimony of that one witness, she can remarry. But also understand, however, that if she remarries and her husband comes back, she's in a lot of trouble. Because now comes out that she was not a widow. She was a married woman. The marriage with her second husband obviously is not a marriage. And so therefore the consequence, the Mishnayos and Yevamos goes on to explain, is teitzei mizeh mizeh. She's going to have to divorce both husbands, etc., etc. Meaning that there are very serious ramifications. And over there, it's totally understandable because when the woman goes ahead and remarries based on the testimony of one witness, she has the burden of responsibility to prove or validate that which that one witness is saying. That one witness is not giving enough credible testimony. And the Chachamim said that we're going to believe that one witness, but the woman has to understand that she's putting herself in a very serious position. So she herself has a burden of investigation, a burden of proof to show that her husband in fact died. That's the Gemara at the end of Yevamos. The Gemara over here, same ramifications, a different infraction. Over here, the infraction is that simply the get was not written to standard, and so again, it seems that over there it's perfectly understandable because she's still a married woman. Over here, less understandable. But again, I already pointed out the Gemara is going to raise that issue.
Mm-hmm. Don't we have a standard for the way men write a get in a ketubah?
It should be standard, yeah.
So why isn't it the same format as the ketubah? Because if you look at get, it's basically a continuation of the ketubah, and they're dependent on each other. So why not the same date be consistent for both?
Right, but the standard back then in terms of dating was in other words, if you went by Bria Solom like we do, so that's nice and easy and standard. Back then, they went by governmental bodies.
I understand, but I'm saying that they had the format already for writing the Ketubah in the first place before these guys had to get married.
Correct. But the date...
Use the same format as Ketubah so that you'd be consistent with dates and, you know, like...
There must have been some sort of variation when it comes to dating. There must have been. Okay, now Tetzim Examizet, so let's go over now the consequences. Number one, she's going to have to get a divorce from both her husbands, both the current husband and the previous husband. Meaning, what does that mean? She has to get a divorce, as Rashi points out. If she gets married with this get, so this get was an improper get, so now she needs a divorce from both. Now, it's true, as Rashi points out, the Kedushin with the second husband wasn't a Kedushin. Meaning, once we invalidate the get, that means that she's a married woman. If she's a married woman, she's not marrying the second husband. She's living with the second husband. She's not married to him. She's not married to the second husband. You don't need a get from the second husband. So the Gemara says that's correct. But however, if she doesn't get a divorce from the second husband, so now you're going to create a serious misperception. Because what's happening is that we who are learning the Mishnah and are learning the Halacha, we know that she's not married to the second person. But that's not the popular perception. The popular perception is that she's married to the second husband. She can't just simply walk away from that relationship without at least what looks like a get. Yeah, correct. So the... So Tetzim Mizeh, she needs a divorce from both. She needs to leave both. Utsricha get Mizeh, she needs to get a get from both. Ve'ein la lo. And now she loses all the rights and privileges she has of being a married woman. Ve'ein la lo ksuva, v'lo perish. She no longer is entitled to her ksuva payment. She's going to forfeit the ksuva payment. And she's going to be, she's a forfeiture of the perish as well. Meaning that a woman, ein la lo ksuva velo peros. Right, the husband's the one who gets the peros. She, in exchange for the peros, is going to get her redemption. In other words, that's a quid pro quo for peros. She's going to get a redemption, so she loses that as well. Velo mazonos, and she is not going to get supported from the husband. Velo belaos, and she's not going to get the worn out clothing. What does that mean? The worn out clothing. If you take a look at Rashi, we did this also back in Yevamos as well. She brings clothing into the marriage. She brings clothing into the marriage. So she normally is able to walk away with her closet and her clothing. But again, because the get was written improperly, and because she's going to get penalized, so therefore she's going to the closet. She'll lose the closet as well. And it goes without saying, but the Mishnah says it from neither husband, meaning she's going to be losing support from both of her husbands, even though we already know one of them is not really her husband, but still, the perceived dual husbands. Furthermore, the Mishnah says, what if she's tofes? Or tofesas, right? What if she takes? Under certain in certain halachic scenarios, even though you can't take somebody to court, but you could do a tvisa, you can do an act of grabbing, a seizure. Over here, the Gemara says that's not going to help as well. Meaning she's so going to forfeit anything that she's entitled to, even if she were to seize and take it herself, it's going to be taken away from her. And v'havlat mamzer mizeh u'mizeh. And the children that she will have from either one of the husbands are going to be mamzerim. Now, the child that comes out from the second husband is going to be a mamzer because, once again, let's say it one more time, the second husband's not a husband. She's already a married woman. So the child that comes out from the second husband is for sure going to be a mamzer, meaning a mamzer min haTorah, because that is a child out of a iser erva. She's an ish ish. What about the first husband, the child that comes out from the first husband? So that child is going to be a mamzer midra banan. Rashi. Let's say the first husband takes her back, and then subsequently they have a child, have a mamzer midrabanan. So that's going to be a mamzer midrabanan. And again, this will be part of the knas that was instituted that she is going to be leaving both men. Okay. Well, there's not. I don't know about a nafkamina. It's just a simple explanation of how can you call the child that she has from the first husband a mamzer.
Cannot marry another
man. Okay. The fourth parak of Kedushin, that's the parak that talks about who can marry whom. And okay, but anyway, but the Vlad is mamzer mizem mizeh, velo zev zem mitamim la, and neither of them could be mitami for her. And now I'm going to say, because Rashi says it, if either one of them is a kohen, now that's a funny sentence because. How can you say if either husband was a Kohen? The first husband we can understand being a Kohen. The second husband, he shouldn't be a Kohen. The second husband should, and if he is a Kohen, shouldn't be marrying her. So I know it's a funny sentence when I say if either of them are a Kohen, but first of all, the Mishnah, I think it's just a stylistic point. Sometimes the Mishnah just has a certain, has a certain sing-song to it, a certain rhythm to it, and so sometimes the Mishnah says something, even though in this particular case it's not perfectly either accurate or it's not perfectly legitimate, meaning a second husband can't be a Kohen, he can't marry a divorcee. Or we could just say very simply, the second husband was a Kohen and she was a Grusha and he didn't really care, meaning he married her anyway. Which we know, there's Tfisa's Kedushin. He's not allowed to marry her, but if he does, the marriage is going to be a valid marriage. Anyway, lo zev zeh mitamim la, velo zev zeh zakayin la b'mitziyaseh, and now we talked about she losing her rights and privileges, and the husband's also going to lose his rights and privileges. Meaning the effective point of the kenas is the chachamim want the marriage to terminate. Period. And so therefore, all rights and privileges she has, she loses. All rights and privileges that the husband has, he loses as well. So, we know that the husband is entitled to a mitzia. If the wife finds something, anything she finds during the marriage belongs to the husband. The earnings the husband gets to the wife. The husband no longer has the right and the ability to annul a vow that she made. Okay, so these are all the rights and privileges that the husband loses. And I say the husband, by the way, I guess in this case I mean both husbands. Right? I don't mean that. The Mishnah says that. Haisa bas Yisrael nifselas min kahuna. Let's say she was a bas Yisrael, and she was a bas Yisrael. From this point going forward in her life, she no longer can eat truma. Even if subsequently she to marry a Kohen, but again, that's kind of right. She couldn't marry a Kohen. Anyway, the Mishnah just simply means that she has now undergone a status change for the worse, and now she is of the status of a Zona. Rashi. Last Rashi on the Amud. The Zona he, the Stam Zona Hainu Eshes, Isha Mazana Tachas Bala. Lachem, Dainu.
Why wouldn't the Grusha suffice for her status being disqualified for all these things?
The Grusha does not make her a Zona.
No, but the Grusha is disqualified from marrying a Kohen or eating a Truma from Kohen, no?
Okay, all that's true. The Mishnah just simply means is that she's basically going to become a Zona. Status-wise, she's going to become a Zona. So the...
But from a Kohen's perspective, is there any Zona and a Grusha?
There won't be different. Okay, Bas Levi Minamaiser. If she's a Bas Levi, So she will no longer be entitled to eat Meiser. Now, Meiser, right, generally speaking, Meiser is not like Truma. Truma can only be eaten by Kohanim, and in non-Kohen, you're ready to eat Truma, is Chayv Misa B'Dei Shemayim. A Levi can eat Meiser, but truth be told, anyone can eat Meiser. Meaning, Meiser has to be given to the Levi, but once the Levi has it, so then he can eat, and of course he can share with whomever he wants. What the Mishnah means over here is that she's a Bas Levi, and as a Knas, it's a penalty, so she's no longer entitled to get Meiser. Bas Kohen min Truma. The Bas Kohen is no longer entitled to eat Truma. The Ein Yorshin Shalzeh, the Yorshin Shalzeh, Yorshin Ksuvasa. Now, her Yorshin, her children, from either one of the husbands, is no longer entitled to the Ksuva. No longer entitled to the Ksuva. Now that's funny. She's not entitled to the Ksuva. So what if she's not entitled to the Ksuva, what does that mean? Her children are not entitled to the Ksuva. So once again, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi addresses this issue. Rashi is four lines down. So Hakatani ain't la Ksuva. The Gemara in Yavamas asks exactly the question that we just pointed out. She's not getting a Ksuva. What are you talking about? Her children not getting a Ksuva. Well, Mishani Ksuva's been in Dichrin. She tiknu chachamim. She yirshu baneha. Yeser al chokehen. Deim achen. Kishameisa bechayibala. Vafapishi ba'ala yorsha. Hachaloshakli de kanasa kansu. So Rashi points out, it's really the Gemara in Yavamas, that when we say Ksuva, we mean Ksuva's been in Dichrin. There was an institution which is no longer practiced. But there was an institution that a woman marries a man, and they go into the marriage, and her father, meaning the husband's father-in-law, is now going to be writing a dowry into the marriage. He's going to be write the Kickstart campaign to get the marriage going, and he's going to put money in. But what he doesn't want is that he doesn't want the eventuality of, or at least the possibility that his wife is going to die, and that his son-in-law now is going to basically take all the estate. Doesn't want it. So what the Chachamim instituted is that as part of the Ksuva clause and contract, what's going to end up happening is that in the event that she dies and there's a Yerusha, first and foremost, before any division of the estate, her children, meaning right, her father's grandchildren, are going to first be getting the dowry that was given into the marriage, and then and only then whatever's the remainder of the estate is going to be divided equitably amongst all the sons, both of this woman and of any other children he has from any other wives. This is what's called Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. So what the Mishnah says is that part of the Knas, and it's so interesting, it's not even a Knas on her, it's a Knas on her children, but part of the Knas over here is because she remarried based on a faulty get, so therefore her children are going to be losing the right of Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. Sorry, I just lost my spot. Now, in the event that they die, so the brothers of both of the deceased husbands will do chalitza, will not do yibum. Will not do yibum because, once again, the marriage is terminated, and the Chachamim did everything within their power to terminate that marriage. Well, they certainly don't want Yibum. What Yibum really is just simply a hamshacha, a continuation of the marriage. It's like the next chapter in the marriage. So the Chachamim don't want it. On the other hand, she may in fact have a Zika. So you can't just simply ignore the Zika, so therefore, Chalitza v'lo miyamin. Okay. All right. That's a lot of ramifications for that faulty get. We move on. We're in the Mishnah. We're in Pei Amud Aleph. Shina Shmo Vishma. Shemira Vishemira. Let's say you had a significant mistake in the get, and that the name was written incorrectly. His name or her name, his city or her city. If any of this information was written incorrectly, so the Mishnah now just writes very succinctly, the get is not a good get, and any ramification that we just discussed in the first half of the Mishnah is going to apply here as well. Any erva where they said to the co-wives, the co-wives are mutter. Remember, first mission Yevamos. This takes us back. Beginning of Seder Nashim. So the first mission Yevamos says that in the event that a man is married to multiple wives, and then he dies, and now they die childless. So now we know that there's a mitzvah of Yibum, where the surviving brother is going to have to marry one of the widows. If one of the widows is an erva to the brother-in-law, so as a simple example, let's say that one of the widows was his daughter, and that means that his brother married his daughter, which is perfectly fine. The brother's marrying his niece. So in the event that the surviving brother has now a mitzvah yibam opportunity, but one of the widows is his daughter, not only is she, of course, going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum, because it's his daughter, but all the cult wives as well are also going to be exempt. This is the very basic halakha of Tsaros Yivam, of Tsaros Erva, the cult wife of an Erva. So now the Mishnah here is going to illustrate the following scenario. Call a Rai Shamar Tsaros Emutaris. So let's say that Reuven dies. His surviving brother Shimon now has the Yibum opportunity, but one of the women is his daughter. And so therefore, because one of the widows is his daughter, not only is she free and clear to go marry whomever she wants, but the other co-wives as well are free and clear to marry whomever they want. Mm-hmm. That's the halacha. Mm-hmm. And then halacha starts elu v'nitzu v'nimtzu elu ailonis. And then what comes out, and we didn't know this, is that the erva, Shimon's daughter, turned out to be an ailonis. And we didn't know this. And that means now that we go back to the marriage of his daughter and his brother, and because she was an Aleph, and because it wasn't known, and because it was a Mekachtos, so that marriage was not a marriage. Because that marriage was not a marriage, all the other co-wives turns out to be not Tsaros Erva, but they're just simply women who have a Zika. And yet they married somebody else. Now, hard to fault them. They thought that they were legitimately excused and exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum because they thought that one of their co-wives was the erva. And meanwhile, it turns out that they weren't. So now they are illicitly married to another man. So what's the consequence? Once again, everything we just laid out. Let's say a man married his Yavama. Okay, so he did the mitzvah of Yibum with his sister-in-law, and the co-wife goes and marries somebody else. And now it turns out that the woman that he married, it turned out to be an islandess. Turned out to be an islandess, which means that she herself is going to be, there was no Zika for the one that he married. And not only is there no Zika for the one that married, but now we go back retroactively, she was really never married to the first husband. And so that means now that the other co-wives who felt that they were now in the free and clear, because again, once the Yava marries one of the co-wives, the rest of the co-wives are now free to marry whomever they want. So comes down in this scenario where, after doing the mitzvah of Yibam, and then the one that you did Yibam with turns out to be an islandess, so now all the other women are illicitly married to another man.
If put this penalty in place, why would they consider that this is not their fault? I mean, they
not her fault, but you know.
Okay.
She wouldn't know that this. She was.
There's a certain. I'm with you. There's a certain amount of due diligence that people have to go into when they go into a marriage.
How can she change
it? I know. The islandess part... The islandess one is tough.
But the thing is, you can also argue that the majority of women are not islandess.
Yeah.
You cannot really fault her for, like, having weight.
Okay. Understood. Cause of sofer, get leish, v'shover leisha. Okay. This in the last case of the Mishnah, it's a comedy of errors, but a comedy of errors that leads to a tragedy. The sofer writes a get for the man and a receipt for the woman. Meaning, here's how the exchange is going to work. The man is commissioning a sofer to write a get for him because he wants to divorce his wife. So now the sofer is going to write a get and hand it to the man. And then that man, of course, in turn, is going to take the get and hand it to his wife. And that's what we've been doing now for the last 3 months. Meaning, that's what's called giving a get. Now, the woman is going to be written a receipt, a shofar. What is she getting a receipt for? Not for the get, meaning she doesn't need a receipt for the get. She's getting the get document, so that she doesn't need a receipt for that. What she's being written a receipt for is her ksuva payment. That if and when the husband eventually decides to pay his ex-wife the ksuva, so then she is going to give him a receipt saying, paid. Okay, and that in the event that there's ever a demand against him once again for the ksuva payment, he'll just simply hold up the receipt and say, hey, I got paid. And I know it's a major debate whether or not we write receipts or we don't write receipts, kosher and shover, ain't kosher and shover. But right now our Mishnah is working with the presumption that we do write a shover for the woman that she can hand it to the husband. Okay, now this is how it's supposed to happen. What ended up happening is the sofer wrote a get, the sofer wrote a shover, and then the comedy of errors, and again, it's not really it's not funny, but the comedy of errors is that he then hands the get to the woman with the misperception that this is your shover that you're going to be giving to the husband. Sorry, he hands a get to the woman, okay, and he gives the receipt to the husband. And then, as they're sitting down at the Beis Din, and they now exchange paperwork, so now what's happening is that the husband is giving the shover to the wife, and the wife is giving the get to the husband, and neither of them know that they're handing the wrong paperwork to the other party. Okay. And right, and how did you get to this point in time?
Is there a receipt involved?
Huh? No, the get is the document. There's
no, you don't. The receipt. Why is the get
nowadays the get is taken away and it's filed and she's given a receipt. But okay, that
when they tell a get has to be big, much bigger than a shover, no?
Okay. Anyway, it's hard to imagine we got here, but we're here. So again, kasav sofer get leish v'shover leish v'tavanasan get leish v'shover leish v'nasnu zeh lazeh ulaachar zman harei get yotze miyada ish v'shover miyada isha. And then, at the end of the year when you're going through your paperwork and, it's the end of the year and, that receipt, and then you hold up what you thought was going to be the shover for having paid off your wife's ksuva, and then you open it up and it's not your wife's shover and it's the get, and you realize that's not good. So, and she, on the other hand, who thought that she actually received her get, did not receive the get, and she received a piece of paper saying, you successfully paid up the ksuva, and that for her is meaningless, and she didn't get a get, which means that she's not a divorced woman. So once again, she had the get in her hand, it was not handed to her by her husband. In order for the get to be an effective get, the get has to be handed to her by the husband. It wasn't. She's not, you're right, I'm saying she's not, right.
Betin doesn't look at
the Beis Din is not only supposed to look at it, the Edom are supposed to look at it, the Edom are supposed to read it.
Right.
How did we arrive at this point in time? Yes. So here you can easily say is malfeasance. Malfeasance on the part of the Beis Din, whoever was presiding over the Edom, it was absolute malfeasance. But on the other hand, again, there's a certain onus and responsibility placed on the husband and wife to ensure that they have gotten the right paperwork and giving the right paperwork.
So the husband, in a way, like he prophets.
He prophets.
Rid of his wife. And she's a penalty by all these things.
Well, right. She's still there. She's still there. Rabbi Lazar Omer. Okay. Rabbi Lazar Omer im la'alter yetze in zeget. Im la'achrizman yetze harei zeget. Local amenem in erishin la'abe zechusa shalsheni. Now, Rabbi Lazar is of the opinion that, wait one second. If the mistake is discovered immediately, so the get is not going to be a valid get. But if this quote unquote confusion of paperwork was discovered at a later point in time, so Rav Elazar says at this point in time we're going to be highly suspicious about the fact that this was a quote unquote clerical error. And maybe, says Rebbe Lazar, is basically saying, this is Rashi's explanation, maybe this is just a little bit of improper behavior on the part of the first husband and this woman. Maybe they're just trying to play around with the second husband. So in other words, if the mistake was caught immediately after, we'll discuss immediately at the end of the shiur today. So then all the ramifications. But if the quote-unquote mistake was found later, at a later point in time, basically we say, you know what, that's highly suspicious behavior. Okay, we'll explain that better later on. My machusheinu hagenas machus haramim. So first of all, let's name names. You date the document based on a government that's just simply improper. It's an improper government. So the Mishnah spoke in very veiled terms. and the Gemara is less so. Now, just again, I'm not really giving a historical explanation, but I think I understand. The Mishnah was written by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in Eretz Yisrael under the Roman government, so he can't name names. Meanwhile, the Gemara, which was written in Bavel 300 years later, the Roman government was or wasn't, right? I remember, this goes back many, either college or high school, I don't know, many years ago. But but somebody quipped, the Holy Roman Empire, once he got to the 3rd, 4th, 5th century, wasn't holy, wasn't Roman, it wasn't an empire. Meaning, so by the time the Gemara is being written, so like they can like name drop. They can like say like, we're talking about the Romans. Okay, so anyway. So my Malchus Sheinu Hogenes, Malchus HaRoman. So we're talking about the Romans. Now, why such a bad rap? Why are they called the Malchus Sheinu Hogenes? They do not have their own language. They do not have their own alphabet. The Romans. Yeah, I don't know. What do you do with Roman numerals? Okay, the Gemara says they don't have their own alphabet and their own language. So, Amar Ula, here we go. The question that I raised back in the Mishnah, but obviously begs an answer. Amar Ula, Mimnei Matakina Machos, Begin Mishim Shal Machos. So, first of all, let's establish a fact. Why is it that when we date the document, we do it based on the current monarchy of the time? So the answer is very simple, Shal Machos. We would like to have a wonderful relationship with our host nation. And our host nation, if we date our documents based on the monarchy, the current monarchy of our host nation, so hopefully that'll create a peaceful relationship between the guest, that means us, and our host country, whoever that may be, at any point in time. Good. Now that we've established that fact, Mishum Shalom Machos Teitzev Avla Mamzer, so now the Gemara says, okay, now I really don't understand. Okay, good. It's such a nice idea. We want to have a harmonious relationship with our host nation. I get it. And now, you're telling me that because we need to have a harmonious relationship, if I write a get and it's an inappropriate writing of the get in that, I don't give a shout out to the host nation. So now you mean to tell me that I'm really going to be that the entire get is undermined and the ramifications, as we went through in the Mishnah, are severe. And we're going to be experiencing these severe ramifications because I didn't properly acknowledge the current monarchy? It's hard to understand. Gemara, ask the Gemara. In. But the Gemara says in a very simple, succinct manner, that's correct. Rabbi Meir, the Tamid Amr of Amnun, Mishmei De'ula, Omer Haya, Rabbi Meir, Kol Mashanah, Mimad Besh, Tavu Chacham, and Begitan Havlan Mamzer. Rabbi Meir says that we've seen it many times throughout Shas. You can see on the side of the Gemara, this is the second time in our Maseches that we've seen this, and that is that Rav Meir says, once the Chachamim have a matbeya, they have a format, a formula for how to write a get. You cannot deviate from that formula. Deviation from that formula will result in a disqualified get, which means that a subsequent marriage will not be a marriage, which means that the product of that subsequent marriage will be mamzerim. That's it. Meaning, you must follow a given format how the Chachamim instituted the get to be written.
The Mishnah is
the name. Yeah. Correct. L'shem Achaz Yavan. And now...
So what should that written? How is this supposed
to be dated in the... So Bizman Mishnah, I was thinking it. I just didn't want to say it out loud. I was thinking, what's the alternative? Bizmana Mishnah? I don't know. Bizmana Gemara? So that's easy. They were in Bavel. They lived in Bavel. So you speak about the Babylonians. You speak about whoever, whoever is the current governmental body then. So Bizmana Mishnah, if Rome is taken out and Mande is taken out and Yavin is taken out, so I don't know what's left. So, okay. I was thinking the question. I didn't have an answer, so therefore I just didn't articulate it. So l'shum achuz yavan utzricha diash min amachuz sheino hogen es mishum de milicham av amachuz ma de amachuz yavan ma de hava hava. So the Gemara says, look, had the Mishnah not said ma de and not said yavan, I might have thought that's not what's the big deal. They're no longer monarchies. They're no longer empires that are on this earth. So it's not offensive. Meaning I'm dating back to the Greek Empire. Okay, the Greeks are no longer in charge. They're no longer around. What's the big deal? And the same thing is true by Mandai. But if we're talking about Rome, right, so they're still in power. So the Gemara says, so that's why I need the Mishnah to tell me that the Greeks and the Medes, even though they're no longer around, even though they're no longer an empire, would be an affront to the current monarchy. So the Gemara says, and look, Binyan Abayis, that's history. Who's going to be offended if we date our documents based on the year? This is the 500th year since the building of the Bais Sheni. I mean, that's not now. Now we are, unfortunately, 2,500 years since the building of Bais Sheni. But the Gemara says, my da'ava hava. And now, if I understand, if we are dating our documents based on the building of Bais Sheni, that is going to be viewed, perceived as an attack and affront on the covenant, on the current host nation. Where basically we're saying, you know, we want Mashiach now. We want to base the Mikdash. We're going to date our documents based on the base of Mikdash. But if we're dating our documents based on the Chorban, right? The base of Mikdash was destroyed circa 1,900 years ago, and now closer to 2,000. So so if we write that, so we're not, you know, it's not, you know, our, you know, a rebellious stance of we want the base of Mikdash, we're dating it from the Chorban. So I might have thought that would be fine. The Mishnah therefore has to tell us that's also not fine as well. You are in the east and you're right in the west. What exactly is going on over there? So, if we got the location of the husband wrong, so then that's already recorded in the Mishnah. That can't be the east-west confusion. El alav sofer. So the Gemara says what that is a reference to is the sofer himself. Kedamar lehu Rav l'safrei. When Rav ever spoke to a sofrim, right? He had the sofer's convention, and the sofrim would come and he would instruct, and this is the instructions. Vechein amar lehu Rav Hun l'safrei, and Rav Hun also gave the same instructions to his sofrim, and that is ki asif su b'shili, ksuva b'shili ve'afagav demimson lechu mile behini. There are two cities, Shvili and Hini, and he told the sofrim, when you write the location of where you are, you write it at the time, you identify the geography based on the time of writing, not the time of commissioning, or not the place, I should say, of commissioning. You were commissioned to write the get in Hini, but then you end up writing the get in Shili. Write Shili, and vice versa. V'chi yasif chubihini, k'suva bihini, v'afakav demesu l'chumele b'shili. Okay. I'm Rav Yehuda Mashmur. Top of Pei Amud Beis. Zu Divrei Rabbi Meir. If you are writing a get, and you wrote it in the manner that was an affront to the current monarchy, our Mishnah says it's no good. And we already gave the explanation, because our Mishnah is going like the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Because you were shonami matbe'a shetavu chachamim. You wrote it in a way that the chachamim did not want you to do so. So, senator should be here. Now, I know, I don't know the governmental structure of Bizman Ha, Bizman HaMishnah, Bizman HaGemara. So senator should be here. I mean, we have senators also, but okay. However they view their senators. But anyway, if you write it and you do not put a shout out to the main governmental body, but you give it to the senator should be here. So our position, unlike Rabbi Meir, is that it's good, it's fine, even though the you didn't give it to the grand monarchy of the time. There was a get. The get was written, dated based on the istandra. It was an appointee of the king, says Rashi. So it was a king-appointed politician of the community. Shachar Nachma Rav Chisal Kamei DeRava Ki Agav Namai. Okay, and what is it? What is the validity of this get? Meaning that he didn't date it to the king, but to a king appointee. Shach Lebahafil Rav Meir Modi. He says, look, the get's good, and I'm going to go even one step further. Not only is the get going to be good according to the Chachamim, I would say that the get is good even according to Rav Meir. Now remember, Rameyer was a hardliner on this issue. If you change the format one iota, the get's not going to be a valid get. I think that in this case, Even Rav Meir would be happy. Why? My time, Rav Meir was a machuzu. So because basically he was a king appointee. So even though you didn't mention the king and you didn't date it to the king, but a king appointee is, even according to Rav Meir, going to be a fair substitute to writing the king himself. Well, my shnami senator should be here. And meanwhile, we pointed out that if you write it to the senator of the city, Rav Meir would not be happy. Now again, we with the Chachamim don't agree with Rav Meir. But Rav Meir, we know Rav Meir wouldn't be happy. But Hasam Zila Luhu Milsa. Hacha Shvicha Luhu Milsa. But the Gemara says, look, the contrast is very simple. When you're doing it to a local politician and not someone who was appointed by the king, that's degrading. You could have dated the document by the monarchy of the time, and you chose some sort of local politician who was not a king appointee. So the Gemara says that's an affront to the king. That belies the whole idea of trying to create Shalom Achos. But if you operate with either the king or the king appointee, so that's something which would enhance Shalom Achos, and even Rav Meir would be happy with that. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Zudiv, Rav Meir, Rav Chacham, Amon, Mavlad Kasher. The position in our Mishnah is according to Rav Meir, but according to the Chachamim, if the get did not follow the monarchy, but some sort of local politician, so the get would be good, and the resulting child that she has from another man would not be a mamzer, but would be kosher. Now the Chachamim said, now that's only if you're changing around the dating on the governmental body. Rav Meir insists the king. The Chachamim said, it doesn't have to be the king, it can even be some sort of local politician. But if you change the name of either him or her, the husband or the wife, in other words, such a mistake was in the get, or where he's from or where she's from, so that is something where the Chachamim would agree, the get is not a valid get, the remarriage is not a remarriage, and therefore the children are mamzerim. Amar Rav Ashi, Avanan, Namitin, Shina, Shema, 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 Rav, Shema, Yirah, Tetsi, Mizem, Mizev, Echol, Drachem, Eilaba. So, Ham, Man, Ketani, La, Ilam, Rav, Meir, Le'arvin, of Lesninu. Now, the Gemara says, now, that line of the Mishnah, is that authored by Rav Meir? The Gemara says, I hardly believe that. Because if it was Rav Meir, why wasn't that incorporated in the first case of the Mishnah? Meaning, if the Mishnah was rattling out, you did this mistake, you did that mistake, why was it included in the first series of scenarios in the Mishnah? And we know the first series in the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. This should have been included with that. It wasn't. So that's evident to the fact that this is not the Shita Rameh, but rather the Chachamim. El Shema Mina Rabbanan, Shema Mina. And then we know that according to the Chachamim, if the name of the husband or the wife, or the cities in which they're from, was mistaken, the get is disqualified, and her next marriage is not going to be a marriage. And the children are going to be mamzer. Kol Reisha Amra V'chulei, Nisu In, Zinu, Lo. Okay. One of the scenarios that we highlight in the Mishnah is a scenario in which a woman thought she was not a Yavama because she thought that she was Pater, and one of the co-wives was an Erva, and then what was unfortunately discovered is that the Erva was an Islandist, which means that she was never married to the first husband, which means that she still had a Zika. Okay, that was one of the scenarios in the Mishnah. Now, what did we learn together in the Mishnah? That if she marries another man, so unfortunately, all the ramifications are going to kick in. Teitzim mizeh mizeh, etc., etc. Now, what if she didn't marry another man, but she simply was with another man, not under the context of marriage? What we would call znus. She was mizana. Okay. Obviously, we're not condoning. We're just simply now presenting us the following question. If she was Mizana, did she now lose her right to be with her Yavam? Yes or no? We know if she married another man, she loses that right to end up marrying her Yavam. But what if she didn't marry another man, but what if she was just simply Mizana with another man? Is she going to lose that right? You could make a diuk in the Mishnah. No, you don't have to. But you could make a diuk in the Mishnah, and that's what the Gemara now is going to attempt to do. Nisu'in zinulo. Only if she marries another man does she become disqualified to her Yavam. But if she's only Mizana with another man, So then she doesn't. That's Rav Hamnuna's of the opinion that a Shomeret Yavam who is Mizaneh from that point and forever becomes disqualified to marry her Yavam. So the Gemara says, "Lo." Even though the deal could be made, the Gemara says, we're not going to make it. So first of all, you don't have to make a deal. You could just simply explain that the Mishnah over here is giving a more pleasant example, Lishna Ma'alya, meaning in terms of illustrating a scenario, we would much rather illustrate a scenario in which she marries another man as opposed to just simply being Mizana with another man. Right, correct, correct. In other words, there again, the same discussion. Similar discussion. And the Gemara says that in the second version, it would be true whether she married another man or she was mizan another man. So the Gemara says, and if that is correct, so then that would be a support for Rav Hamnuna. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, no. The Mishnah's example over here is limited to the case where she marries another man. Because if she marries another man, under those circumstances, so there, all the penalties are going to kick in. Because if she marries another man, even though she's not quote-unquote technically married, but if she marries another man, so then people are going to say, well, in a parallel scenario, i.e., her husband went away, he didn't come back, and there was, and a flimsy report came back that he died, and she marries another man, etc., etc. So under those circumstances, that was marriage, followed then by marriage. This too is marriage, followed then by marriage. So under these circumstances, we have to be worried about parallel circumstances. But if she was just Mizana, and again, we're not condoning, but if she was just Mizana, this won't lead to the confusion between this case and the case where the wife's husband goes away and did not come back. Hakones es yevimto. Utsricha. The e ashmi inan behachamaisa mishum delo ikayim mitzvah yibum. Avahacha de ikayim mitzvah yibum emalo. The Gemara says, you know, the scenarios that were given at the end of the Mishnah were either the co-wife was thought to be an erva, and she wasn't. It turns out where the one who married the Yavam thought that she had a mitzvah. Turns out that she didn't have the mitzvah. So why all these cases in the Mishnah? The Gemara goes on to explain. Tzricha, I need these cases in the Mishnah. Why? In the first case, there was no mitzvah of Yibum at least being attempted. Because again, everyone thought they were excused. Because they thought that one of the co-wives was an erva. Over here, at least she thought she was performing the mitzvah of Yibum. It's like, the Gemara here doesn't use this language, but it's kind of like Toa B'dvar Mitzvah. Meaning, she thought she was doing the right thing. In that she was getting married. So I'm alone. So I might have thought that the Chachamim wouldn't be penalized. And on the other hand, the first case is advantageous because she didn't even think that she had any issues whatsoever. She thought she was free and clear to marry whomever she wants. And so therefore, why would we penalize her? So Tzricha, the Gemara says, that's why I need both cases. Okay, and let's just finish up. And the Mishnah's last scenario was the comedy of errors, where the get was given from the sofer to the woman, the shofar was given from the sofer to the husband, no one bothered opening up the paperwork, reading the paperwork, they exchanged, and the Mishnah says that all the consequences, teitzim, zemiz, etc. And then the Mishnah brought in the opinion of Rabbi Lazar. And Rabbi Lazar says, is that if the mistake is discovered immediately, so then we're going to have the ramifications that we just laid out. But if it's l'achar zman, so then Rabbi Lazar says, I don't really think it was a mistake. I now think if it was l'achar zman, that there was a little bit of Rashi's language back in the Mishnah, kinunya. And we're worried about this was a deception. To which now the Gemara wants to define, according to Rav Elazar, what does it mean immediately? What does it mean l'achar zman? Hey chidami. Hey chidami l'alter. Hey chidami l'achar zman. I'm Rav Yudah. I'm Shmuel Kozman. She yoshim v'asukim v'osu inyan zel l'alter. I'm du zel l'achar zman. As long as we're sitting down there at the proceedings, that's considered la'alter. If we get up, so that's considered la'achrizman. Ravada ba'ava amar lo nisei zeu la'alter, nisei zeu la'achrizman. As long as she has not remarried based on the document that was given to her, and again, she thought it was a get, so that's considered la'alter. Once she gets remarried, that's considered la'achrizman. So, Tanan, the Gemara says, can we look back at the Mishnah? Lo kolem enem in rishon la'abit zechutzo shasheni. The Mishnah says that she no longer has the ability to remove the rights of her second husband. What does it sound like from the Mishnah? She remarried based on the document that was given to her. So, Haina Diktani Shein. I'm sorry. So, Bishlam al Rav Ada Ba'ava, Haina Diktani Shein. So, according to Rav Ada Ba'ava, yeah, that's right. Meaning, at what point are we at right now? We're already after she remarried based on the document that was given to her. So, but Elo Shmuel, my Sheni. So the Gemara says, but according to Shmuel, remember, the moment we get up and everyone goes home, that's considered Lachar's man. She's not remarried. She's fresh off the divorce. What does that mean, Sheni? Who's the second husband over here? There is no second husband. So the Gemara says, exactly, Zechus Ru'uyel Sheni. Right. The way you're going to read the Mishnah is that not the second husband who's here, because he's not here yet. She's fresh off the divorce. It means her next potential second husband. He's going to, and once they stand up and walk away, Rav Elazar says, if anything now comes up of, oh, mistaken paperwork. She wasn't given her get. He wasn't given the shover. At that point in time, if we walked away from the Beis Din, it sounds fishy. Even though there's no second husband, it means the rights that we will end up giving to the second husband. Adka.